It's the Truepenny Show with your host, James Truepenny.
Hello, welcome to the Truepenny Show. My name is James Truepenny. This is my show. And today we are in Las Vegas, Nevada for Double or Nothing Tomorrow Elite Wrestling to discuss this momentous occasion, because this is the first time for a long time we have had a new company that did a full pay-per-view event that was a very successful, financially at least, pay-per-view event. And to join me to discuss these great and wondrous things are the Alexes, both Watt and Edwards. We'll start with Mr. Watt. How are you, sir?
Hello, yeah, excited. You sound really excited to talk about this.
I was. It was really good. I really enjoyed this. An American wrestling promotion I like. Rare.
What a turn up for the Bucks.
Yeah, who knew? And Mr. Alex Edwards, how are you, sir?
I am good. I'm excited to talk about this, as apparently everyone is. It was a really good show, so I'm looking forward to getting into it.
Yeah, it was a really, really good show. It worked really well. Loads of stuff to talk about on this show. Loads of stuff in the aftermath to talk about in this show as well, and reactions as well from other people. But we'll start with Alex Edwards. What were your thoughts going into AEW, having watched All In? What were you expecting?
So, I'm someone that follows Being the Elite every week and have quite closely followed everything that's been going on sort of leading up to this show. And sort of follow along with the signings that have been made, stuff like that. I was quite optimistic about how this would go. I thought All In last year was one of the best shows of the year. And then seeing the sort of the messaging behind what they're doing here, I was quite optimistic. And so, yeah, going into it, I was really looking forward to seeing what they would do. I thought they had quite a lot of unique matches on there. Like seeing a card where you've not only got Chris Jericho, you've got Kenny Omega, but you've also got Aja Kong. It's, you know, you're really hitting that, oh, there's a bit of something for everyone kind of vibe, which I think is really good. And that's what you should have on a good wrestling show. So I was optimistic going in, really looking forward to what this could be.
What about you, Mr. Watt?
Yeah, I think optimism's the right word. Like, I think we expected and hoped it would be a really good show, but then what we actually got was pretty special. Like, I don't know how they could have hit a first show out of the park more than this, really. Like, I thought it was pretty much borderline perfect. There's only sort of a few minor gripes here and there, which, you know, they even said after the show, you know, it's a first show, they're going to have a couple of hiccups along the way. But yeah, I think, like Alex said, All In was fantastic. But this then really took it to another level, and it felt like its own company. But then they were showcasing, you know, the diverse talent as well, and talent from other promotions. And like Alex said, there was really something for everyone. Like, to see Aja Kong on a major pro wrestling show in America as one of, like, kind of the big legends was awesome. And yeah, just showcasing loads of new talent, exciting talent, tag wrestling, loads of surprises as well. Good surprises, not like surprises that detract from the product, surprises that actually added to the show, you know, imagine. And yeah, I just thought they hit out the park completely. And even they've even got US senators tweeting them about it. That's how big they are.
Congresswoman. But she
congresswoman,
is, but
sorry.
She is the best congresswoman.
Exactly. They've got AOC promoting them, and WWE have got Saudi Arabia promoting them. So
yeah,
make of that what you will.
All right, then. So let us move on to the first match. Now, the first match was really the Battle Royal, because that was on the pre-show. A couple of other matches as well. So I'll have a quick run through the pre-show, because as I've looked at the cage match, no one put the pre-show on the cage match page. That's rude and mean. It wasn't that bad. It was all right. It was pretty cool. Some interesting bits in the Battle Royal. The obvious thing was Adam Page, because everyone predicted that beforehand. He would be the last guy in the Battle Royal, which was true. He was the last guy in the Battle Royal. But it was pretty fun for what it was. A few things I could have done without. few things that didn't make sense. But overall, I thought it was a good battle royal that kind of did what it was supposed to do. Yeah. What's your thoughts on this, Mr. Watt?
Yeah, well, I guess the one big disappointment of the show was obviously Adam Page and Park not having the match on the main card. But this was a good use of Page. It still kind of built him up as the star. They obviously want to set him up as one of the main stars of the company. And yeah, it was a fun battle royal. Like, there was a lot of fun little moments, which is what you want from something like this on a pre-show. They had, you know, showcasing new stars, bit of comedy, some cool spots. I mean, is Joey Janela okay after going through that table face first, the madman? But yeah, you had a bit of nostalgia. You had like surprises in that, you know, like Ty Dillinger being in there. So it kind of ticked all the boxes, I guess. As you touched on there, the minor criticism would be everyone kind of knew Adam Page was going to win it. So it wasn't a huge surprise. It wasn't a huge surprise that he was the final entrant and then he was in at the end and won it. So I think that fell a bit flat maybe because people maybe were hoping that the last guy coming out would be a big shock or something. But also the rules were probably a little bit more complicated than they needed to be with all of the card casino stuff. So I don't think it worked quite as well as the over the budget battle royal that they did All In. But then again, I mean, Jimmy Havoc stapled Tommy Dreamer's testicles. So what more could you ask for, really?
Indeed.
And also MJF was fantastic as well.
He is brilliant.
Yeah, they pushed him as he's going to be one of the top heels, and he was just healing it up for the entire battle royal. They obviously had that segment later on as well where he got to show off his mic skills as well. And yeah, used the old heel trick of hiding under the ring, and then it didn't pay off, and Page eliminated at the end. So yeah, I think it pretty much ticked all the boxes that you want from a battle royal like this.
Good mix of old and new, I feel.
Yeah, yeah.
Mr. Edwards, your thoughts?
Pretty much that. I think it was all right for what it was. I think I'm really actually quite glad that they didn't do the big swerve with Page winning. I think it was expected and it was a little predictable, but I think that's fine. I think one major problem I have with a lot of the time with WWE is they will set something up for so long and it might be predictable, but it's predictable because it's what people want, or it's predictable because what would make sense for the story. And a lot of the time they will try and swerve and surprise people just for the sake of having a surprise. And so I'm really glad that here AEW didn't fall into that trap and they just went with the predictable winner because it made the most sense. And they do want to push Paige as a major star. So I thought that was good that they stuck with their guns like that. But yeah, as Alex said about the rules, it was a bit confusing, I think. I think especially at the start, that the first group come down and it seemed a bit like they didn't really know what was going on. Like, Justin Roberts, as the announcer, sounded a bit confused. And then sort of the countdown didn't work. And then it all got a bit, no one really knew what was going on. Suddenly some guys showed up in the ring. Luckily, they smoothed it out sort of from the second or third set of guys onwards. It was smoothed out. They had the countdown working. Everyone came out at the right time and it worked. But I think there were a little bit of sort of teething problems to start off with, which, you know, it's a new company. This is their first time doing a major show like this. And so it's to be expected they're going to have those minor issues. I don't think it took away from the match at all. I think it let it down a little bit at the start, but I think they managed to pull it back. And you had a lot of those cool moments. You had your nostalgia in there. You had some new guys on show. I thought Ace Romero looked really cool in here as a big man. I think Luchasaurus looked pretty good as well.
Yeah,
and I was surprised that he made it that far into it. I thought he would have been a sort of in and out guy. But yeah, so I thought it did its job. It introduced a bunch of new guys that maybe people hadn't seen before. Everyone got a sort of a little moment to shine a little bit. And I thought it did its job, basically.
This was the match where Jim Cornette's little blue vein began throbbing at his temple and would explode before the end of the evening. We'll move on from there. Doesn't like Luchasaurus at all. Anywho, which is quite remarkable because you'd think he'd like dinosaurs. Anyway, the first match of the evening, proper on the show, featured SCU, Christopher Daniels, Frankie Kazarian, and Scorpio Sky. They defeated Strong Hearts from OWE, Seema L. Lindemann, and T-Hawk in 30 minutes and 38 seconds. Oh, a bit of a corker. This was kind of exactly what you wanted from this kind of opening match on a big show. I really enjoyed this. Not a lot to say about it story-wise. Two trios teams who are well-drilled, can do their thing better than pretty much anyone else, and I really enjoyed it. Thoroughly cool, to be honest with you. Mr. Edwards, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. This was the perfect match to start the show with. You have SCU come out and get the massive, massive reaction to start off the show, which is exactly what you want. You think if you've got people watching this and they're seeing these guys for the first time and they're checking out AEW because they've heard, oh, it's a new wrestling promotion, I'm going to see what their first show is like, this is the perfect way to start off, where right away, even if you don't know who everyone is, they look like legitimate stars right off the bat, the reaction they get from the crowd. And so right away you're invested in, wow, these guys are really they're really popular. I wonder what they're going to be like in the ring. I want to see more of them, and it's a really good way to start off. And then this match was just, it was just your sort of your junior tag flip-flopping all over the place. But as we've said before on multiple New Japan shows that we've reviewed, this is always a good way to start, where you have your junior tag that you have some cool spots, you have your flipping all over the place, it's fast-paced, and it just gets people invested in the wrestling. It's a good way to kick off the show, get up the excitement. And I thought it was really good. I thought everyone looked really good. I was especially impressed with Al Lindemann. I thought he looked great in this match. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing more of Strong Hearts and seeing more of the OWE guys come over and seeing sort of how they're slotted in the show. I'll be interested to see if going forwards, if it is just they're used in this sort of role as your opening match sort of cruiserweight stuff, or if they get stories going on. I guess it would depend on sort of scheduling and all those sorts of things. But I thought this was a really good way to start the show, and I really enjoyed the match.
Mr. Watt, your thoughts?
Yes, I would echo those. It was pretty much the perfect pick to open the card. Like you said, SCU, really over. Also very reliable as well. Also, you know they're going to give you a good performance. It's cool to see like Kazarian and Daniels featured on a major new show as well. You know how long they've been in the business and stuff. It's really nice to see them get that opportunity. And then you've got this cool new faction from OWE coming in. And straight away, AEW is marking themselves out as different by having this, you know, Asian team come in and work a trios match, you know, on a major show in the US. I think Seema as well is going to be like such an asset for the company in that regard, because he's basically an expert at laying out trios matches and trios tags. So he can help those matches all over the card be awesome for AEW. And yeah, great opener. As Alex said, you know, if you're tuning in for the first time, you know, haven't seen the pre-show or anything any of these guys have done before, you're straight away seeing them presented as stars, but you're also straight away seeing this is going to be a different kind of show, you know, with the way the opener was done. This isn't something you're going to see on other major North American promotions, if you like, opening up the show. So, and obviously it gets the crowd hyped up straight away, so they're fully into it and reacting. And yeah, everything you want from an opener like this, high impact, fast paced, loads of cool spots, cool dives. I agree with Alex that Lindemann looked really good. Felt like he was going to delay German anyone in sight, which is always welcome. And yeah, it was, what else can you say? I think I was surprised that SCU won, actually, would be the main thing. I thought maybe Strong Hearts would take the win because they were the new faction coming in. It'd be interesting to see, you know, how featured they're going to be on the events going forward, and how featured SCU are and stuff like that. But yeah, I guess to talk about one gripe to bring it in at this point, JR's commentary. now, I love JR. He's a legend, and he was actually pretty good overall during the night, but worth mentioning here, he kept calling them Chinese, which wasn't great. I realised the promotion's from China, but none of the guys are Chinese. They're all Japanese. So that was a bit...
Yes.
Like, it was known in his ear telling him that. But on the positive side, Excalibur, I thought, was fantastic all night. I thought he was very much the heart of the commentary team for the whole evening. And it was an awesome opportunity for him to step up on... I know he did All In as well, but this is like the next step up, if you like, on this major new show. And I thought he was awesome.
I think... I'm going to say this. I think Alex Marvez was surplus to requirements.
Yes, I agree on
nothing
that.
Nothing wrong with him. Didn't do a bad job. He was, but you don't need three of them. And Excalibur essentially wrestles like... Sorry, wrestles. Excalibur is essentially Jim Ross with a California accent. So if you've got two guys who commentate in a very similar way, and then a third guy who can just can't find space between these two people who will not stop talking ever, what's the point in him being there?
Yes, I agree on that. I forgot he was there most of the time, to be honest, now you say it.
But yes.
I really do without him being there. He lacked energy. He really just didn't seem to... I don't know if it wasn't interested or just didn't really know what to say, but I think he took away from things a bit where luckily Excalibur was there to make up for it.
Yeah, it just... Yeah, no, I mean, don't get me wrong, none of them did anything bad at all. It's just that there was just too much of it. It was just like, why are you... Like, get rid of one of you. Don't care which one. Just get rid of one of you. I'd take Excalibur over JR, to be honest. But, yeah. But, yeah. Anyway.
I mean, I would make the team Excalibur and JR. I think you have JR there for the mainstream legitimacy and to bring in... That sort of status, and then you have Excalibur there as your guy that knows everyone, and you know he can give you all the moves, he can explain all the gimmicks, he knows who everyone is. JR's there to explain the stories.
Yeah,
and then I think Alex is he's not needed.
Yeah, he's kind of like
I think that's spot on. Yeah,
I think he's a better backstage interviewer type person than he is a color commentator person.
Yeah, or like your pre-show host or something like that.
Yeah, but you've already got Alicia Tout, so why do you need him? So, yeah, it's... Anywho, right, we'll move on to the next match. Second match was the first women's match of AEW. Britt Baker, Awesome Kong, Kylie Rae and Nyla Rose. Britt Baker takes the win, which is kind of expected. Awesome Kong announced before the match with Brandi Rhodes. She's kind of turned heel at that point to bring in her new talent, which was really cool. Worked out really well. Thoroughly enjoyable kind of four-way match. Not my cup of tea normally, but it introduced all these women really well. Would have preferred two singles matches, though, got to say. But yeah, did the job it was supposed to do. What are your thoughts on this, Mr. Edwards?
Yeah, I thought it was good. I think the Awesome Kong reveal was great. It got was just fantastic, and she looked really good in this match. She didn't do too much, but what she did do looked really good. I've got to say, I think of all of them, Nyla Rose might have looked the weakest here. I think, obviously, in the build-up, she was being set up as like the big monster. But then right away, you brought in a bigger monster. And so she sort of becomes a bit obsolete. But I thought Kylie Rae and Britt Baker both looked fantastic. I'm happy that it seems like the top star of this division at the moment being Britt Baker. You've got this really sort of... got an inspirational female character as your lead rather than, I don't know, the sort of stuff that we've typically seen in women's wrestling going back over the last decade. You've now got this inspirational character as your lead. You've got Kylie Rae in there as your sort of, your more, I don't know, I can't really think of the right word, but I guess the more appealing to a younger audience kind of face. And then you've got your big heels, or your monster heels in Awesome Kong and Nyla Rose. I think it's a good starting place for a division. I'll be interested to see what other women they bring in and how they're used, especially with, so later on we've got that the Joshi six person tag. I'll be interested to see how many of them stick around and how they're used and how they mix with these four.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting to see that. Mr. Watt, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I mean, the awesome, we spoke about, you know, surprises on the show being genuinely good. This is one of the main ones, and it was. The Awesome Kong surprise was genuinely fantastic and also a genuine surprise. I don't think people saw it coming. I liked the tease with Brandi coming out in her wrestling gear, like she was going to insert herself into the match, which is simple but effective. Did, you know, does the job. And yeah, it was, first of all, it was genuinely cool to see Awesome Kong back in there on a major wrestling show. And also when we're talking about casual viewers and bringing them in, remember that she's one of the stars of a massive Netflix show, you know, yes. Glow. So it's smart on a number of levels from the AEW guys, because they've got that mainstream side, but then every, you know, the core wrestling audience all know Awesome Kong from WWE and TNA, you know, the run she had there. So
yeah,
I thought that was a really cool idea. I agree with Alex that maybe it meant that the Nyla Rose ended up being a bit kind of lost in the shuffle, but I think still she played her role really well with Kong. You know, they sort of kind of took each other out in the end, and the feature was very much Britt Baker and Kylie Rae, and they got to shine, particularly down the closing stretch. I think the main thing the match did really well was introduce those two to the audience, because I feel like they're going to be the main two stars of the division, at least initially. So it was the right call to feature them more heavily. And yeah, Britt was great, obviously got the win as we kind of expected. I haven't seen a lot of Kylie Rae, I have to admit, and I thought she really impressed. Like, she looked great and is just a really different character that can appeal to a different segment of the audience, and be interesting to see if Awesome Kong is sticking around. I believe she's got like merchandise made and stuff, which would imply that she is. So
probably, yeah.
I think, yeah, so like her as like the monster heel against Kylie Rae as a face, you've got the makings of like a phenomenal feud there straight away, you know, kind of playing off what Awesome Kong did back in TNA.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say maybe you keep her around as like your final boss. So she doesn't appear all the time, but maybe once or twice a year she comes in and has one sort of big feud or one big match, and that's how you use her.
Yeah, I think that's probably about right. I think that's where they're going with that. It makes a lot of sense, really. And also, I kind of think she's probably a Jim Ross signing. He does like people who stabilize a locker room. Veterans who know what they're doing, going to keep, you've got a lot of young talents, some that don't necessarily speak English. She's bilingual, she speaks Japanese, she speaks English, she understands where the Joshi girls are coming from, she understands where the Western wrestling women are coming from. She can bind a locker room together just by being there, you know. Also long time mates with Aja Kong, so it's and former tag team partner of Aja Kong, so you know, I think there's good reasons for her. Just, she's a good hire all round. She's another road agent. She's another kind of top-level trainer. She's got so many things going for her. Really be very useful to have her about. Just on the Nyla Rose thing. By the way, if you have a problem with Nyla Rose being in this particular wrestling company, look well down the street. It's a place called Fuck. Get to it. She's awesome. She's awesome, and it was fantastic to watch her wrestle in this particular show. I think you do right. She does lose the shine somewhat of being the monster and not being the monster anymore. But equally, I think she's got someone she can learn off the. If you've signed Aja Kong and you've signed Awesome Kong, you have the queens of the monsters to that are currently active in wrestling to learn from, and I think she will learn an awful lot. Right then, move on to the next match. Yeah. The first tag team match in AEW history: Best Friends Chucky Taylor and Trent Barretta. They defeated Angelico and Jack Evans in 12 minutes and 42 seconds. Kind of a lovely little spot fest, this, but with plenty of story involved as well. Mr. Watt, your thoughts?
Yeah, was this announced before the show, by
no,
the way?
No, I don't think so.
No, I mean, if it was,
it was on. They did like a special episode of Being the Elite on the Thursday before the show. They did like a bonus episode, and it was announced sort of during that. So it was sort of a last-minute announcement.
Okay. So it was definitely the replacement for Park and Page then, essentially. But yeah, I didn't know it was coming. I hadn't seen that being the Elite episode. So I popped big when both these teams came out, because I didn't even know the match was on the card. So yeah, it was a nice surprise in that sense. What wasn't a surprise was how great the match was with the four guys who were involved. And like you said, James, it was kind of a nice little spot fest. Loads of fast-paced, cool spots, you know, as you'd expect from these four. Jack Evans, still made of slinkies, I think, was bumping, just bumping around for everyone like a superstar, as he always does. I mean, the way he sells a DDT makes Rob Van Dam look reserved, quite frankly. he was kind of like, felt like, I don't know if the star of the match is the right way to put it, but he was kind of the standout guy. I think if you're a new viewer and you've never seen any of Jack Evans' stuff before, you'd be like really, really blown away, I think, because he still to this day does some of the most insane stuff. Even with the likes of Ricochet and Ospreay coming in, Jack Evans can still absolutely blow you away with some of the stuff he can pull off. It was just a really well put together match with the spots. You had the little bit of comedy in there, you know, the best friends constantly wanting to hug it out and stuff like that, which the crowd were really invested in, which I enjoyed. Best friends getting the win in the end. I imagine they're going to be one of the featured teams of the tag division going forward. Nice touch, obviously, having them hug out after the match. And then you had the big run-in afterwards as well with Super Smash Bros, which kind of, yeah, you can see how the tag division is starting to take shape now, which was, yeah, all round with like the match and then the post-match. It was really well put together, I think.
Definitely, for sure. Mr. Edwards, your thoughts on this matchup? Oh, I was going to say, before I go any further, this was the point where Jim Cornette said Angelico was too white to be called Angelico. Bear in mind that Angelico is actually South African and was named that by AAA. That was the name that they give him. He didn't take it himself. Actual Mexicans call him Angelico. And he's a friggin' angel. Angels are normally associated with whiteness. Just saying. Anywho.
Like Cornette has surpassed himself here, to be honest. Like...
I'm not getting into the whole thing because it'll just make people angry. But yeah, this one, they were like, what? Yeah, anywho. Mr. Edwards, carry on.
Yeah, bit of a weird one. I thought this match was good. I think, as Alex said, if you haven't seen these guys before, this was a really good showcase of just some crazy stuff they could do. I think there was one point where I think Angelico had one of the two, I can't remember, I think it might have been Trent, up in like a torture rack position, and Jack came off the top, did a double stomp, then vaulted off into a moonsault to the outside on the other guy. That was just like mental. there was a lot of just crazy things like that, which I think is cool to see, and it broke up the show a little bit, where you had your six-man spot fest to start off with, then you have a bit of women four-way, like, I don't know, getting a bit more into character work and stuff like that. Then you go to this, and it's nice to sort of see the shifts in styles between each match. I would say this maybe was a little too long. I think at points, towards the end, it started to drag a little bit, but I think that might have just been where I was looking forward to a lot of the other matches on the show and wanted to get to them. So, yeah, I think overall it was good and all four guys shone, and I'm really looking forward to seeing, as you said, about the tag division developing a bit more. With the reveal of the Super Smash Brothers afterwards, it was a bit unfortunate that they hadn't had a sort of a hype promo or something sooner. I feel like if they had some sort of hype on being the Elite or Road to Double or Nothing or something, it may have helped, because I think a lot of people didn't exactly know who they were.
Yeah.
And I think that let it down a little bit. Where I get that you want it to be these mystery people coming in and destroying them, but I think it would have at least helped to have had some sort of, even if you don't reveal their names or something, you just have something where you know these people exist and they are coming. And you don't know when they're coming. I think that would have helped.
Yeah, I think.
I'd go with that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think with Super Smash Brothers, like, unless you're watching Ring of Honor in 2011 or Shikara in 2012, you might not know who they are. And as big as Ring of Honor and Chikara were actually in that time period, there's still not many people. They were getting like 10 to 15,000 pay-per-view buy rates worldwide. Then that's not a big audience. And this show gathered 98,000 worldwide. So I'll tell you how much bigger it was. I think it's, they could have done more to promote Super Smash Brothers, and but they're clearly as well trying to plan things, and they didn't want to say Super Smash Brothers, you know. So it kind of like, it kind of dulled the momentum a bit. I think you're right. But yeah.
Hopefully they can rectify that going forward anyway, and really introduce who they are to the audience.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
I think a lot of it is sort of waiting until the TV show starts up later in the year to really get into being able to promote characters properly. But at the moment, it is sort of a bit, you know, you have your YouTube presence, but how many people are following that week to week, and then also buying the shows, and it's a bit disjointed. I think once you've got your weekly TV building up to shows, you'll be able to get into a more regular rhythm where people will be able to follow more easily.
Yeah, definitely. What were our thoughts on the 10 count for tags in and out? Clearly done to encourage double teams.
Yeah, I like that they threw that in. I feel like that might be a bit of a JR type implementation of, you know, let's try and have some kind of rule, because we know there are, you know, in this match that we just spoke about, there was a lot of forgetting that the ref was supposed to be getting them out of the ring still, and that kind of happens in modern tag team wrestling. So I like that that's kind of, you know, sort of a solution to that. I think that was quite a smart touch, actually.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I think it's the, you know, JR, when he was doing New Japan commentary, complained all the time about Red Shoes not getting control of a matchup and one thing and another. And it's like, well, yeah, now he's got the chance to help set the rules. They've made the rules leeway, to give leeway to everybody so that they can have all this stuff and it still makes logical sense, which I think is reasonable. So, yes, that makes sense to me as well. Right then, we move on to the six-man tag, don't we? Hikaru Shida, Riho, and Ryo Mizunami defeated Aja Kong, Emi Sakura, and Yuki Sakazaki, 12 minutes and 58 seconds of a brilliant wrestling match. I would say my favorite match on the card up until this point, though one other match did surpass it. You could probably guess which one after this one. But this was just brilliant. I love this match. I love the way they presented the women in this match. Kind of blew the other women's match away. But I do realize as well that these people were far more experienced than the others were, so that's probably going to help. But this was exactly the kind of thing you get in a six-man Joshi. This is kind of like a big kind of big car Joshi match from Japan just transplaced to Las Vegas. Mr. Edwards, what are your thoughts on this matchup?
Yeah, I'm basically echoing what you just said. I thought this was fantastic. It was, again, something a bit different, and you could tell by the crowd reaction during it, it was something that a lot of people hadn't been exposed to before. And so you started off a bit quiet, but then it built up, and it built up, and it built up. And then by the end of the match, you have the crowd shouting, "This is wrestling." You have the crowd shouting, "This is awesome." You have the crowd going crazy for every near fall and every spot that's happening, because they just did such a good job. And it's, as you said, this is, if you were to place this in Currican Hall, it would be your standard six-woman tag match, and it would be good, but it fits within the show, and it's what you expect. When you take that and you place it here in Las Vegas on an American show, suddenly it's, wow, this is really different. This is really cool. This is something special. It reminded me a lot of back in ECW, you'd have your Japanese match on an ECW pay-per-view where people might not know who it is in the ring, but they're going to really enjoy the match and they're going to be really into them by the end of the match. And I thought this was a bit of that sort of presence here. Mm. I think Hikaru Shida looked fantastic. And I think of these six, she's the one that's actually signed with AEW, isn't she?
Yes, she is. Her and Aja are signed, I believe.
Okay. And I think I also heard something about Riho. I don't think she's signed, but I think she's doing a sort of a three-month run or something like that. So I think though they looked amazing, and I'm, as I said earlier in the other women's match, I'm looking forward to seeing how they mix with the American women and how the whole division comes together. But I really enjoyed everything about this. It was just a lot of fun. You had your comedy in there, you had your hard hitting stuff. It was just a really fun, well put together match, and I think it got over really well.
Yeah, I think so as well. Mr. Watt, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, after echoing your thoughts, both you guys, like I think it was probably the strongest match to this point in the show. Basically echo what you guys said. I thought it was awesome that this was showcased on the card. Like, you know, to us, we watch a lot of Joshi, but obviously, like Alex said, the fans haven't necessarily been exposed to this kind of wrestling before. And I thought it was awesome that AEW chose to showcase a big Joshi match on a major show in North America. Not just showcasing the new talent like you guys touched on, but also you've got Aja Kong in there, you got Emi Sakura in there, and listeners of this podcast will probably know them, but casual US wrestling fans aren't necessarily going to have been exposed to them and know what kind of legends they are. Like, Aja Kong being on a major show in North America is amazing. Like, it's so cool that she got and was treated like the legend she is, you know, was bigged up by everyone. And yeah, I think, like you guys said, this was probably the best match of the night up until this point, as we probably expected it to be, but people who haven't watched a lot of Joshi wouldn't have known that. And yeah, won the match of the night overall. Obviously, the screw up with the bell at the end and ringing it too early was a bit of a shame, but I think they covered it well, because it was such a close near fall. They could play off that fact. It's odd that happened, because then completely the other team won anyway. So I don't know if that was the planned finish or not, but yeah, it was just a really great showcase for all six wrestlers, you know, the newer wrestlers and the legends. Another fantastic tag match on this show, full of them. They said they wanted to showcase tag wrestling, and they did. And yeah, it was just great to see Aja Kong kicking the crap out of people as well.
Fair enough. I think you're about right there. It's interesting, because as I talked around people this week, one of my colleagues said, didn't get into this match at all. And I was like, but why not?
What?
I was like, because they said, well, I didn't know them very well. And I was like, you've watched loads of Britt Baker and Kylie Rae, have you? And she was like, it was like, oh, well, it's the style of the match. And I'm like, I'm not completely convinced. I think you're not connecting with it for other reasons, which we'll not go into, which people could find offensive. But yeah, anywho, that was that. I can't believe that someone didn't get into this match, because it was just so much fun to watch. Next up, though, was a highly anticipated effort. After a year away from the ring, Dustin Rhodes makes his return at Double or Nothing to face his brother, Cody, in 22 minutes and 28 seconds of one of the best matches you will watch in North America this year. It was brutal. It was incredibly violent. It was done in service to their father, and he would have been very, very, very proud of them. It was perhaps a bit too violent for certain people's tastes. It was a good job it was on pay-per-view and not on a TV show. It would have ended their careers very, very quickly. But this was a very serious story told very, very well. Mr. Watt, your thoughts? Dustin versus Cody.
Yeah, this was tremendous. Obviously, it had a real old-school vibe, which fit really nicely on the card, because it was so different to everything else. Like, I would see a lot of people after the show saying they thought this was the match of the night, and I can kind of understand motion and the blood touched on. It's a real throwback, but done with a modern twist, which is great, and it's not seen in 2019, you know, anywhere else. Obviously, and this absolutely was that, because let's face it, for worse, like, nobody really does matches like this anymore with that kind of, you know, we talk about New Japan a lot, like telling an emotion, we always talk about there, but they would never use blood like this. So
no.
The lack of those things in North American wrestling, particularly with WWE, is something people have bemoaned for years and years. So I thought it was a great touch for them to do that. And like you say, it was very much playing off Dusty as well and his history of matches, which was great. And yeah, it was just so well done. I was watching with my friend and I actually turned to him towards the end of the match and said, how many moves have they actually done? You know, which wasn't not in a dick way. It just shows how well put together it was, because they had the crowd completely in the palm of their hands and they didn't have to do a lot to bring the audience with, because they had the social thing. I showed Dustin said, in fact, like, we could have screwed up every move in that match and the crowd still would have come with us because of the story we were telling. Saying that, the superplex off the top absolutely terrified me.
Yes.
Because it looked like they were going to mess that up. But again, that added to the drama. And yeah, it was just really well put together. You know, Brandy played a role brilliantly as well. Added that X element in, and obviously Cody's entrance we should talk about as well. I know they said they weren't going to take too many shots at WWE, but that was a pretty blatant one, a Triple H after his comments during the fame, which I enjoyed it. I'd be interested to hear what his take on it was, but I thought it worked really well, I have to say.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting to see what they were going to do. I knew they were probably going to pull something, maybe not as obvious as what they did. what are your thoughts on this, Mr. Edwards?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think of anyone to take that shot, it was going to be Cody, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He's made his brand at the moment for the past couple of years has been basically FWWE. And so, yeah, I think it was done in an entertaining enough way, though. It wasn't just what... If you think back to what we saw years ago with Billy Gunn and Road Dogg in TNA, where they did the whole big promo about, I'm calling out you, Paul Levesque and Michael Hickenbottom, come on down here to the Impact Zone and we'll have a real fight. It's like, no, it's just tacky. But I think this was, I mean, I'm going to use the word subtle. It wasn't subtle at all, but it was subtle enough that it wasn't a blatant call out of mentioning WWE. Onto the match. This match was just fantastic. It really shows that when you have a simple story, you can do so much with it. Because really, you think about it, this story is you've got an older brother and a younger brother. They don't get on, so they're going to have a fight. And that's it. And they did so much with it and got everybody so invested that it was just so well done. It makes me really shocked, to be honest, that Dustin Rhodes sat in WWE for so long on this last run and did nothing. They didn't even have him like agenting matches. They had him just sitting there doing absolutely nothing. And it shows that, you know, he's got so much he could give and so much he can do still. He's got such a great mind for wrestling. And it was just a really fantastic story, a really fantastic match. Alex spoke about the performance of the match, and, you know, they didn't do all the flashy moves and stuff. What they did do fit so well. And I think I've heard a lot of other people say this as well, but I think this was the best match Cody Rhodes ever had.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, just from a storytelling perspective, he's the sort of wrestler where he's not going to be doing the flashy moves like Young Bucks or like Kenny Omega, but he can tell a good story really well. And I think this sort of match is sort of his niche. You saw it similarly when it was him and Nick Aldis at All In, where, again, they had a simple story that was told really well and it produced a really good match. I think his niche is this old school storytelling, which I think really, really, it works. And the blood, listening to Dustin Rhodes did an interview Q&A panel the day after and said that actually the blood, they didn't plan for it to be as much as that. How much of that is him working and how much of that is true, I don't know. But he said, you know, we weren't planning on it being that much. And at some points, Cody was looking at him like terrified, like, oh god, he's bleeding so much more than we planned for. There's blood everywhere.
Yeah.
But it worked, and it worked for the story, and you know, it's just, this is your sort of your classic emotional wrestling that so many people feel like this has been lost in the wrestling business, and it's nice to see it make a sort of a return here, because you, when you listen to older wrestling fans talk about, you know, matches back in the territory days, which drew so much emotion from a crowd by doing so little, this is the sort of thing they were talking about.
Yeah.
And it's really nice to see it back on a major stage like this. And then obviously you have after the match as well, Dustin Rhodes sort of feigning retirement and Cody pulling him back in, saying, nope, I need my big brother to team up with to face the Young Bucks. And again, both in tears, the crowd is really into it, and it was so, so well done.
Yes, it was really, really well done.
Did you see as well, someone put a video together of how that Cody post-match promo was kind of mirroring a promo Dusty Rhodes did to Dustin,
yes,
in WCW,
yeah,
which
that,
there's no way that was coincidental, because I know John Moxley spoke about it on the Jericho podcast, didn't he, of how much him and Cody just studied wrestling and stuff. So I think that was definitely intentional from Cody, such a student of the game. I thought that was, yeah, I didn't realize that at the time. I thought it was just a really good promo, but it was a nice little touch as well to bring Dusty into the story even after the match. You know, that was so cool.
Yeah, definitely. It just all worked. This was what wrestling should be about. Again, it was kind of grim, difficult to deal with, but yeah, it worked really, really well. And I'm glad this match happened so much, you know, and we'll see what they can do. And it is like, you know, having Dustin and not doing anything with him. And also, point you made, Alex, Billy Gunn was the producer for the show. So, you know, that callback.
Yeah, that's true. So.
Yeah, that callback. And the other person who knew an awful lot about switching sides as well was Dean Malenko. He was also a producer on this show. So they were around for those big invasion angles of the late 90s, early 2000s, and the Impact days as well. So it showed that it was well put together. They've learnt from the mistakes they've made before and figured out how to do it well. So definitely. Right,
the other thing as well I was going to say is it's crazy that WWE never thought they should do Cody and Dustin properly as a proper feud. Like, this completely showed them up again. Not that they could have had this match in WWE, so I think it worked out quite serendipitously in the end, because they couldn't have told a story with this much emotion and blood and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's just crazy when you see the chemistry between them that WWE didn't think they should put that on a WrestleMania or something, you know, a big show.
Yeah, yeah, it's just insane. But there you go, it worked out really well for everybody else. And then we move on to the AAA World Tag Team Championships. The Young Bucks successfully defend against the Lucha Brothers. This is the most watched tag team match of 2019. Over 5 million people have seen this match now. Mr. Edwards, your thoughts on this incredible story and an incredible match with just insane athleticism, but still based around proper wrestling storytelling. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I mean, so just before this, we had the AEW title reveal as well. So we had the AEW title reveal with Bret Hart and Jack Whitehall there as well, which for our American listeners, they said he was a massive star in the UK on the show. And I mean, I'm not sure I'd say massive. He's definitely known, but I'm not sure I'd say he was a massive UK star. But it's still cool that they got someone. Like
of
that,
BBC,
yes.
Of BBC Two channel, of BBC Two panel game show fame.
Yeah, I mean, if we're targeting the E4 audience, then there you go. But yeah, so you have that. I think it was cool they got Brett there. I mean, I saw a report earlier in the week about how they originally wanted Ric Flair to be the guy presenting the title, but obviously with the medical issues he's had recently, they have Brett coming instead.
Yeah.
But I think it worked, and you had Adam Page, you had MJF out there. MJF was fantastic. And you could tell how good he was just from the fact that in the background you could see Brett cracking up every time Jeff spoke. But yeah, so that was cool. But this match, this Young Bucks Lucha Brothers match, again, I've said it a lot on this show so far, but it's again switching to a different style of wrestling, and it worked really well. As you said, you still had the story there, and you still had this like this big feud between the teams. They don't like each other. They're gonna go for it and fight, but they're gonna do it in their style, and I think it worked really well. There was some stuff in this match which was just crazy, like a springboard top rope Frankensteiner on point was mental. Yeah. You had a lot of your big dives, but I think the Young Bucks, again, I've said it before about seeing their stuff in New Japan, but they found this style now where they have a cool mix of, they do their flippy stuff, but they fit it into a good story, and they fit it into, you know, they pace it well, and they have a reason for everything happening. And so I think that was just really good. I think what we didn't see in this match, though, was they were hyping up beforehand on being the Elite and stuff like that, about having a new finishing move they were going to use. And yeah. we never saw that come out. I mean, if you listen to Alex Marvez, you might think at one point you saw it come out, but he was quickly corrected by, Excalibur, and, you know, it wasn't. But yeah, I'm interested as to why they hyped that up so much and then never paid it off. I don't know.
Nah, there you go. Just the way it is, I guess. Mr. Watt, what are your thoughts on this tag match?
Yeah, I mean, the finisher thing, yeah, was something I picked up on. It's strange they teased that only for nothing to happen with it. So I guess we'll keep an eye on that going forward. But yeah, match of the night for me. I thought this was everything we hoped it would be and more. They probably took, like, a few of the spots they threw in were beyond even what I was expecting from them, to be honest. But it's funny, I don't know if you guys saw the little media scrum that the Young Bucks did after the show, where they spoke about, obviously, they were basically worried the match was going to be a disaster, Matt said, because they'd been running around so much setting up stuff for the show, because it was, you know, only the second time they'd done it, obviously, that they didn't end up having as much time as they wanted to lay out the match. Plus, on top of that, they had the language barrier as well to contend with. So they were like the fact that it ended up being as good as it was some sort of a miracle. Like, but yeah, I think it was match of the night in terms of, you know, it was incredible spots, but it also had that story running through it. Like you said, it was a great advertisement for tag team wrestling again, which is what they've wanted to push. And I think this very much, this was modern tag team wrestling at its best. In terms of the story, I really enjoyed the idea that the Bucks were playing off the fact that they were rusty early on. Like they hadn't wrestled much recently. So they were, you know, they were struggling. They were making mistakes. Their timing was off. Nick hit Matt like a few times early on in the match, you know, by, you know, miscommunication, stuff like that. So they were playing off, you know, the fact they were getting frustrated, and they're taking on this unbelievable luchador team, and they haven't quite got it together. I thought that was a real idea to start with, and then they had to fight through it and find their rhythm, and then Matt's arm gets taken away by Pentagon, obviously, as Pentagon likes to do. But yeah, obviously the Canadian Destroyer spot on the apron was
insane.
I wish they did something like that. The one that actually popped me the most was Phoenix doing his rope stuff where he jumps on all the ropes, but then he did it into like an assisted Hurricane Rana, and it was just how do you even think of that? Like, these guys are just unbelievable. And like I say, it was just, they took all the storytelling elements and then gave you all the crazy spots and insane double teams and timing that again, someone tuning in for the first time would be like, has probably not seen a tag match this good in a long time. If they're, you know, if their viewing is very, I guess, WWE centric, if you like, or more North American centric. So yeah, it just ticked all the boxes. And yeah, they obviously finished it with the Meltzer driver as well, which again, one of the, still, we've seen it so many times, but it's still one of the most insane double team moves that anyone's ever come up with. So it was nice that they threw that in as well.
Yeah, yeah. Also, I mean, my favorite spot was the spike package power driver run across the ropes from Nick to do the plancha on the other side of the ring. That was insane.
Oh my God, yeah.
The spots were just
yeah,
mental.
There were so many. I'd forgotten that one even happened.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there was just so much insane stuff they threw in.
It was just jaw-droppingly good quality, this particular matchup. I do think I probably still preferred the women's match better because there was more storytelling in it than the high spots, but it was exceptionally good. Then we move on to the main... We have both talked about, all of us talked about this bit, haven't we? Yes. finally, it's a long time since we've done three on a show. The main event of the evening, Chris Jericho versus Kenny Omega 2, the follow-up to the Wrestle Kingdom match of a few years ago. Chris Jericho comes out the winner this time, interestingly. And this was a straight wrestling match, no disqualifications. This had a few more limitations to it. And to be honest with you, I've been a bit rough on Chris Jericho the last couple of years. I am a bit sick of seeing him, to be fair. But this one was a very watchable match, and he actually tried a lot harder. He didn't rely on brawling. It was a wrestling match, and it worked really, really well. And surprisingly takes the win. Now, he's got a big match at Dominion next weekend, so we'll see how he does there. But in the meantime, let us talk to Mr. Watt and see what he thinks of this particular matchup.
Yes, really good main event. I think, interesting, I'm sure I saw, I guess, the usual suspects who tried the event down they can, which I don't agree with at all. We have the knowledge of how good their New Japan match was. A casual viewer doesn't necessarily have that. This wasn't quite as good as their New Japan match. We should say that straight away. That was, but they set their standards so high in the Tokyo Dome. You know, they arguably stole the show that night. This was just a really great main event. And I think it's showcased Kenny really well because, again, viewers who've never seen Kenny Omega wrestle before had to do that job, you know. They're just going to have heard that this is the best, you know, everyone's talking this guy up, the best in the business. So he had to deliver, and he did. And again, I think you mentioned, like, it was a straight-up wrestling match. They still threw in a little bit of stuff with the table.
Yeah, they did do that.
But that worked. I think it speaks to the kind of smart layout of the show overall, that, you know, there was a little bit of weapon stuff on the pre-show a little bit, but in terms of the main card, how much was weapon stuff really used? You had the blood in the Cody and Dustin match, but other than that, you know, that exposed turnbuckle spot in that match, and then there was like Aja Kong bringing her in into the ring in the Joshi match. Other than that, you know, they hadn't done a lot of weapon stuff, so the table stuff fit really well, because so many times that happens on major promotions where they've just used everything for the whole show, and then it loses its impact by the time you hit the main event. So yeah, so the table spots worked really well in the match because of that. And yeah, I just thought it was a really good main event. You know, it was a shame there was that botch on the DDT spot. I wish they hadn't just then repeated the spot. So then that draws even more attention to the fact that they screwed it up. But, you know, everything else was brilliant. I think it was a really good intro to Omega. I was surprised Jericho won. Like you, I realised that in the feud, now they're 1-1, but I thought they would push. You know, I thought Omega would win. He's obviously going to be one of the main stars, main new stars of the company, but maybe it was because of what happened in the post-match. You know, the fact that the winner of this match got a title shot. I kind of get why they've gone with Jericho on that front, because it's going to be Jericho against Paige, which is your, you've got the, you know, the legend against the new guy. You've got a story there. And then obviously with the Moxley running afterwards, which I'm sure we'll talk about a bit more in a bit, they've set up him against Kenny Omega next. So I guess the result makes sense in that sense. But yeah, really good main event, I thought.
Mr. Edwards, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, just to follow up on something you just said there, Alex, I think both of you have said you were surprised that Jericho won here, but for that reason you just explained about, you know, the title shot and everything, I actually wasn't too surprised. I thought Hangman Page winning the Battle Royal earlier in the show and gaining a title shot sort of, it made it a bit more, not telegraphed, but a bit more expected that Jericho would win here as the heel. Because I think it's a more natural title match to have with a babyface Hangman Page, as you said, the sort of the new guy on the scene and this new star they're trying to establish versus your legend heel. I think it adds a bit of legitimacy to the AEW title to a mainstream fan, where if your first title match was two guys they might not necessarily know, it may diminish it a bit in the eyes of someone who's flicking through TNT or ITV4 or wherever they're watching, and happen to see it, they're going to be like, well, I don't really know who these guys are. Whereas Chris Jericho is a more recognizable star fighting for your title. It will, in theory, draw those people in more. And so I think it made sense that he did win here. And also you have, like you said, now in their overall feud, they are tied 1-1 in terms of wins, so you can always build up the rubber match as well at some point down the line.
Yeah.
As for the match itself, I thought it was really good. So we've already had our flip-floppy six-man tag. You've had your women's four-way. You've had your stand tag matches. You've had your big main event tag. You've had your old-school, like, brawling sort of territory storytelling match, and now you get your big Japanese style main event. And so again, it's that different style of wrestling again, and really showcasing something else on this show, which I really liked. I thought a lot of the stuff in here was really cool. I think it was, as you said, it was good that it was a good standard wrestling match for Kenny, because of, you know, people not necessarily knowing who he is as well as Chris Jericho. And so it helped to establish him here in a big main event match like he had. Although he did still have, you know, you had Jericho doing his thing with the cameras on the outside. And as a cameraman myself, I was not happy to see water getting spat all in the lens of...
Oh, yeah, not good.
And so you had a whole, like, 5-minute part of the match where it was just, here's the hard cam for 5 minutes, because you can see both the camera guys on the other side of the ring trying to clean all this water off their lens. So that was, yeah, that was what it was. but it worked for, obviously, the character that Jericho is playing. He's trying to play this sort of psychotic heel that's just going to do what he wants. And so it works for that. I thought they still had some cool spots in here. Like, there was one point where you had Jericho catching Kenny with a co-breaker when Kenny jumped from the top. That was cool. You had, obviously, all your V-triggers and whatever else with Kenny. And yeah, I also, as an anime fan, appreciated Kenny's entrance jacket, where he's wearing the jacket of the main character from Sword Art Online, which was a nice little reference and fits with, obviously, Kenny's gimmick of this video game anime fan.
Yeah.
That worked quite well. I also thought his new music was pretty cool. He hyped that up as, obviously, not being allowed to use the New Japan music anymore and having this new song that he was going to be using. I thought it worked quite well. So yeah, overall, I was pleased with this match and the show overall. And I think, obviously, following this match, you had the biggest moment of the show, where, I'm guessing we're going to get into it in a second, but you have the Jon Moxley attack, which worked really well and really set the show off let the show off on a really a big high. And I was happy to see that throughout all the matches on this show, you set up so many matches for the future, because you've now got, out of this match alone, you've got Kenny versus Jericho 3. You've got Jericho and Paige. You've got Kenny and Moxley. You've got Jericho and Moxley. You've got, you know, four or five matches set up just from this one match alone. You go back through the card and you can see so many matches being set up with different people throughout. So they're really, they're doing well to push forward towards future shows and get people interested in seeing these characters face off against each other later on, which I think is, for a first show, that's exactly what you want. You want to set up as many feuds as possible so that you get people invested in seeing what's going to happen next.
Alex, what, have you looked to this match yet? I have, haven't you? I'm trying to make sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll move on then. So, to round off our conversation today, as Alex just pointed out, John Moxley comes down and invades AEW, for want of a better term. But it kind of been done before this way, but certainly it was a big, big moment in pro wrestling. The former WWE star who's managed to get out of his contract early, possibly lied to WWE in the process to get out of it, but looks a much happier and healthier man. I'm going to ask that question. Where does John Moxley fit in AEW, and how do you feel AEW is going to go going forward? Alex Edwards has kind of like explained where he thinks things are going to happen. What are your thoughts overall on the show as well, and how do you think AEW moves on from here?
Yeah, so it's pretty much what I just said. I think as far as Moxley goes, he slots straight into your main event. But what I'm glad they've done is, unlike what you saw in the past with a company like a TNA, for example, where they get a new WWE or an ex-WWE star and they push them right to the top and they go over everyone else, here, I don't know, I feel like I trust AEW more to do it properly, where, yes, he's going to be straight into the main event, but he's not fighting for the title right away, and he's got a bunch of programs set up with different people. I mean, his first match with the company is against Joey Janela, who on this show was just a mid-card guy in the Battle Royal. So it's good that they're not falling into the trap of, we've got a big WWE guy, here's his title. They're being smart about how they're doing it. I'm remaining optimistic about this company and about what they're going to do going forward, because I think, as we've all said already, I think they hit it out of the park with this show. Everything on here was, if not good, great, if not even better. And I think they've really established themselves as a major player in sort of North American wrestling scene. And they've set up a lot for the future in terms of matches, in terms of future shows, in terms of just future characters that you would like to see more of. They've set up a lot going forwards. And as I said earlier, they are obviously pushing towards TV starting, I'm assuming, around October time. Don't know if they've announced a date yet. I don't think they have. But they've got a lot building up to that, and I think this is the right way to go, where you have these shows where you build up a lot of hype and a lot of interest in future things, because then that's going to draw the people that watch this show, that's going to draw them back to want to watch again, and that's going to draw them to, you know, any other wrestling fans that didn't watch this show, they're going to hear how good it was, and they're going to be interested to check out next time. And you build up like that, and I think it should work out really well for them if they carry on as they are now.
Alex, what are your thoughts on AEW? Where do they go from here? And did they hit out of the park?
Oh yeah, they definitely hit out of the park. I think, yeah, it's just really exciting. Again, like, the landscape of North American wrestling is really exciting coming out of this, which is what we wanted. I think kind of feels like being a kid again, you know. It feels like AEW are gonna push WWE, and that's what all the guys in AEW say they want. They want to create this alternative, and they want to not just create the best product they can for the guys on their roster and attracting new people, but make WWE better as well, because they've obviously got loads of friends who work there, and they've already shipped, which is up in the talent. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure everyone's heard heard John Moxley on Jericho's podcast by now, and him talking about the mad creative process there and stuff like that. And he basically said it, you know, he wants AEW WWE to be better creatively, you know.
Yeah, I can, you know,
Raw this past week, but it will happen.
You would hope so,
eventually,
wouldn't you?
This is already having an impact again.
I said you would hope so, wouldn't you, really?
Yeah, I mean, that's what happened, you know, in the mid to late 90s, where the WWF were driven to be better and they had to step out of their comfort zone. I think they'll ultimately happen again. Yeah, I think like Alex said, you know, they used Moxley really well coming in. You know, he made an immediate impact, but it would have been, you know, they teased, for instance, like they teased Moxley and Jericho and had a little bit of interaction, but they're not going to work together. You know, it would have been very, at its worst, if you like, to just put the two WWE guys together. You know, we've seen that. We've seen that within WWE. Where's the excitement in that? It's a lot more exciting to have Jericho take on the new star in Paige and have Omega and Moxley set for their next big show, which is, you know, something of a dream match as well. You know, probably not something we thought would ever happen. So I think, yeah, like you guys have said, plan, it seems very smart. Yeah, it's cool to see everything from the very first show on top of, we probably knew there was going to be great matches. That's the main thing we were expecting out of this show, was lots of great matches, and they delivered big on that, but they delivered on storylines and on setting up the future as well. And I think, yeah, it's just really, really exciting, the landscape now. And yeah, I think even if they just in landscape, but the fact that they did such a great first show just takes everything to the next level.
Yes, it does. And I think that's probably the lasting kind of thing we've got to say really about the show. It was really, really good. It was well balanced. It was well presented. It was well put together. It did annoy some purists, and it was going to annoy some purists because these guys have made this kind of wrestling work for them to the tune of 12,000 people at the MGM Grand. And that's no easy task. As WCW will tell you, they went there many times and did it, but it took a long while for them to get that big. And AEW have done it the first time out. I think it puts pressure on Ring of Honor to up their game, because now 10,000's like not that big a number anymore to Madison Square Garden. They have to get more, do that more and more often. Certainly puts pressure on Impact Wrestling, who are kind of the kings of the AAA talent swap agreement, which they aren't really there anymore. AEW have kind of taken that. So it's not just WWE who are going to be feeling the pressure. I think people have got the right ideas. Kind of do your own thing and make your own way. Make a product people enjoy and people will find it better. And I think AEW have done the right thing with this. I think there's lots of things about this company that are very, very good. The sensory packs, which were really, really cool for autistic people so they can enjoy a wrestling show and find some personal space in a big arena, was an incredibly good idea. And I think those kind of things that they're doing really, really well, which is what AOC was talking about, the positivity, the diversity of the company. It is a kind of liberal left-wing wrestling company, and we never thought we'd ever see that. It's kind of wrestling for us.
You say that, but then, interestingly, on the political side of things, you have Cody and the Bucks, who in the past have come out more on the conservative side. But you know, when it comes to the sort of the social side of things and the diversity and acceptance kind of things. I mean, Cody did an interview a couple of weeks ago where he spoke about how being in an interracial relationship helped to expand his worldview and help him to see, you know, people's views and that sort of thing, and lead to this sort of product. And so I think it's interesting how you've got that mesh of different political ideas. As much as you don't want to involve politics in wrestling, inevitably it does become involved somehow,
But I think it's good that you've got a real mix of different opinions coming together here to produce just a product that everyone can enjoy.
This is a much bigger tent. And obviously you are going to get some conservative opinions because it's Cody and the Bucks, and they're kind of like about making money and capitalists, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But there is the balance of diversity, of the LGBTQI representation. As Brandy said, you know, she stopped Cody being colorblind, which is a very difficult thing. People don't necessarily want to be post-racial. Well, we can't be post-racial yet. You still have to understand there are certain things going on in this world that need to be addressed. So I think that's really, really cool. But yes.
Yeah, that's what AOC actually tweeted about, wasn't it? Was the diversity, and it was that interview that Cody did, which I thought, I thought that interview from Cody was really good. More companies and people should take notice of like the lessons he's learned along the way. And like you say, the diversity on the show, you know, the fact that they brought in all this impact and women were so heavily featured on the card, it's all really positive. I think the buy rate as well came out yesterday, and it was close to 100,000 buys, which is more than anything ECW did in their prime. So I think straight away it shows the buzz that there is around AEW. And the task for them now is they've got to keep that momentum going. But on the, you know, on the evidence of this and what they've set up going forward, I think we've all got faith in them to do that, to be honest.
Indeed. The only thing I'd say about that was it was 98,000 worldwide, not just the US. And obviously, ECW had limited markets. But equally, 98,000 worldwide when New Japan World only does 110,000 and they've been around for 5 or 6 years, that's pretty damn good.
Yeah, it's a good starting.
Good starting point, certainly. Right then, that ends our show for today. I'd like to thank Alex Watt for his contributions. You can find him at AlexWatt187 and on his podcast. I'll let him talk about that. Where can we find you on your podcast, sir?
Yes, you can follow that at Did It Cross. Did It Cross the Line. It'll be going out Monday, won't it? So I imagine I will also have Did It Cross the Line out on Monday as well, talking about the Champions League final. Hopefully positive things. That is tonight as we record, and I'm starting to get nervous now that we've stopped talking about it.
Okay, then you can find Alex Edwards, Alex_Edwards_ on Twitter. Thank you very much for your time, sir.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with all this stuff going forwards. And I'm also looking forward to Spurs winning the Champions League tonight.
Don't say that. Right then, whilst these two sort out their differences, I'm James Troopany. You can find me on Twitter at Sheriff Lone Star. You can find us on Facebook, The Troopany Show, and Patreon, The Troopany Show, where you can keep us free forever for everyone. You can also find us on Twitter, The Troopany Show. Thank you very much for listening to our show this week. You will have a Telling Stories, which tomorrow is about Millie McKenzie. I go back into an interview I did with her for Total Wrestling Magazine last year to celebrate the fact that her and Charlie Evans are the new Sendai Girls Tag Team Champions and are possibly up for grabs as one of the best tag teams in the world, as we've been talking tag team wrestling today. We will probably get back to Wrestling Rewind at some point. Darryl was on holiday last week. We've kind of got to the end of our series on the invasion angle, hence the reason why we didn't have a show this week, but we are working on things with Darryl to bring back the Wrestling Rewind as soon as we possibly can. Please listen to our partners at powerslam.tv, where you can get a free month when you use the code MULLETWATCH. And we will see you soon. Enjoy your wrestling. Take care and have a good week. Bye.